Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm Rick Allen, and during this segment, we're going to learn about an organization that is part of the United Nations, I believe, and it's been started here for the first time, and so it's really interesting. It's called Girl Up, and joining me in studio right now is Jana Omar. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Now, Jana, we talked briefly before this interview, and I was amazed really by yourself. First of all, can you tell everybody how old you are?
I am 14 years old.
14 years old, and you're heading up the local chapter of Girl Up, and you're the founder of the local chapter as well. Let me ask you, what inspired you to do this?
I heard about, obviously I'm very familiar with the United Nations Foundation. I heard that they had, a specific branch for girls called Girl Up, and I searched for a local Girl Up, and there was no local Girl Up, so I guess I didn't want to just give up, so I started my own, and it started off with me just recruiting my friends, and they recruited more people, and then we got a pretty good group now.
Now, what was it about Girl Up that you liked?
I really liked how instead of just the United Nations asking people to send in donations for girls suffering around the world, they were having other girls raise awareness and funds for girls that are suffering. And it's kind of girl empowerment, which is something I'm really, really passionate about.
Okay. You said you've got a number of people to sort of help you with the cause. Well, how many? What's the number we're talking about?
I think we have like 18 to 20 people in our group right now, and we're hoping to grow. I mean, we only started in February, so that's a good number.
That is a very, very good start.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Girl Up, let's talk about just its global purpose. What does the group do?
Well, there's a lot of girls around the world, especially in third world countries, that are living in circumstances where they don't get basic needs like education. Over 60 million girls are out of school. And it's not the same situation for the boys either, because there's this ideology that boys are the supreme gender, or because there's just not enough resources for girls to, afford education or healthcare or anything. So Girl Up's global cause is just about helping these girls and breaking through that ideology by having other girls do that for them.
Now, it is something important to note. Here in our country here, we do struggle for equality among the sexes, mm-hmm. and we still got a ways to go in that department. But you look around the world, and there's quite a few places that are lagging behind. Mm-hmm. And that's an understatement. And I don't mean to downplay it. Mm-hmm. Now, you yourself, you have an ethnic background, and mm-hmm. how does that play into your desire to want to be part of something like this globally?
Well, I'm very lucky because I grew up in a family where women empowerment was important, and men and women are always treated equal. And generally, when I grew up in the Middle East, I lived there for 4.5 years. I generally lived in a culture where that was the general, that men and women are equal. But there were some instances where sometimes I wouldn't see anything wrong between the treatment of me and a guy, but someone else would point out that this isn't really fair. And it got me thinking a lot about how there is kind of a double standard for women everywhere in the world. And I'm lucky to be brought up in this era where feminism is such a used term. It's part of people's vocabulary, which is that also played a role in me thinking about helping girls. So I think it was just me naturally. I don't think it had anything to do with my ethnic background. I think it's just me growing up and seeing that it was part of the cultural conversation.
Well, I think that's what makes it part of your decision, because you have personal mm-hmm. experiences that many of us here in the United States don't have. That mm-hmm. We we can watch things on television and we can hear about them from other people, but you know, you've experienced things firsthand, which makes, you know, what you're doing even more powerful, because you could be an inspiration to other girls as well to, you know, understand the importance of an issue like this.
Yeah.
And what does Girl Up do to alleviate these problems?
Well, right now, our local chapter is working on the education crisis, because I feel like the first step to solving any problem is for people to be educated. I feel like educated societies are more likely to get out of that ill ideology that women are different than men or deserve to be treated differently. So we raise awareness and we raise funds, which helps buy resources for girls. The money goes to either building schools or getting staff or getting them textbooks and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But we also work with, you know, health, women's health, providing hospitals, because a lot of women in third world countries don't have hospitals, and the leading cause of death is, you know, death during labor, for example, because they don't have hospitals to go to. So we provide, the money provides them with hospitals. It also, we also work with foundations that help get women out of domestic or violent relationships, just things like that.
You recently hosted a film over at Michigan Tech, and this was your first public event, I understand, right?
Yes.
Okay, what was the film?
The film was He Named Me Malala. It was a movie about this girl called Malala who lived in Pakistan, and she dealt with this ideology again that girls couldn't go to school and that they didn't need to. So it was just her story of how she stood up and she faced serious consequences for standing up, because that's just not culturally acceptable, I guess, to defy that, you know, that standard way of thinking. So her journey is really inspiring, so it was good.
And how was the film received by those that came to see it?
It was received really well. We got many donations from people there on the spot. We got people telling us they wanted us to come in and talk in other places like schools about the issue. So it was received really well.
Was it successful as a fundraiser?
Yeah. I think our goal was $250 and we raised $300. So that's good.
That's good. Yeah. And were you able to send that money in? How does that work?
Yeah, we're going to send that money to the United Nations Foundation, which is like the mother organization on top of us. And we are going to specifically send in, you know, a request for what we want that money to be used with. And in this case, it's for the education crisis.
Does the United Nations help you in return in any way in order to, you know, get your local chapter established, guidance, materials, anything like that?
They do send you materials when you first start the group. And we have like an online portal that directly connects us to the United Nations. And every time we complete an activity like this, we enter, we submit an activity report to them so that they learn about the activity that we hosted, and they award us like points. And at the end of the school semester, they do reward us in some form, and there is a National Girl Up Convention in Washington, D.C., which I'm actually attending this year, and they bring speakers, and they have the Girl Up leaders, such as myself, go lobbying on Capitol Hill and speak to congressmen, so they do reward us, yeah.
Yeah, that does sound really, really exciting. What an opportunity. I'm still kind of amazed that, you know, the number of people that you have involved already, because they have, you know, 18 to 20, you know, young girls. Are they all about your age?
They're all about my age, yes.
All about your age, okay. And you think of, you know, the different things that girls your age would, you know, could possibly be involved in. And, and some of them are great things to be doing, whether they're, you know, involved with school, 4-H club, Girl Scouts, whatever it might be. I imagine that those that are involved in something like Girl Up have a different perspective in that they're a part of something that is, you know, I'm going to get in trouble for saying this, a lot more serious than, you know, just, you know, getting together with people and having fun. I mean, you're mm-hmm. taking on some really important issues that are affecting people throughout the world.
Yeah, and I think that's why I got so attracted to Girl Up, is because it targets younger people, so we can still have fun just like they do in Girl Scouts and stuff, but it's always something that I say to the girls before we do anything, is that let's just renew our intentions real quick, that we are going to have a blast doing this, but first and foremost, we're doing it for the other girls who can't afford to have fun around the world. So, yeah, it is really cool that it blends in something so meaningful with also just being a teenage girl.
What are some things that you need?
Need in...
Do you just need people, volunteers, just people to join, money, place to meet?
I think all of that stuff works out. I mean, I think members is a really good thing to have. The more members, the more powerful we can be. So that's definitely something I'm on a journey looking for, more teenage girls in the area who are willing to join this cause. And you know, at first I started off by recruiting my friends, but it's not something for me and my friends, it's for something in for girls in the Ho and Keweenaw counties, 6th grade through 12th grade, who want to help with this important cause. So I think members is one thing, and yeah, donations either to our club itself so we can afford to put on events, or to the issues that you want to see fixed. Yeah, those are two things, I guess.
Hey, if somebody is interested, how do they get in touch with you?
Well, there is, like I said, an online Girl Up site, and it's www.girlup.weebly.com. And, you know, on that website, we have our social media platforms, we have upcoming news, we have a direct email address that you can email to contact us. So I think that site is... Mm-hmm.
Do you have any more public events coming up, whether it's a meet and greet or something like you did with the film?
We are currently planning an event, maybe for, you know, late May. But it's not, we haven't secured our venue yet, so we're not making it public yet.
Oh, okay. Well, people need to check out the website there, and
yeah,
and that's one way to keep in touch and find out when you do have more information on that. So I really do appreciate you coming on. This is an exciting organization. I can't wait to see how this grows, and we'll have you back on soon with an update.
Thank you.
And joining me in studio right now is First Lieutenant Randy Dennison from the Michigan State Police Calumet Post. Randy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rick.
I invited you to come in and talk because recently was the 99th anniversary of the Michigan State Police. And, you know, we don't hear a lot of history of the State Police. We just, you know that you guys are there and doing a great job. And so a little bit of history came out around that anniversary date that I thought was really interesting. So this was a good opportunity to kind of take a look back about, you know, where the police force has been and where you are now here in the Copper Country and how the efforts are going for law enforcement here. So kind of let's start a little bit with a history lesson. What can you tell me about the Michigan State Police?
Well, Michigan State Police, Rick, started back on April 19th, 1917, when the governor, Albert Sleeper at the time, established what they called the Michigan Constabulary Troops to help secure the mining ore that was up here on the Upper Peninsula. And that's where it all started. So it's actually kind of unique that we're up here in the Copper Country where the Michigan State Police actually started in this area. And this year is our 99th, and again, next year is going to be our 100th anniversary. And we're very proud of our traditions, and we're very proud of everything that our department has done in this coming up 100 years, 99 years.
How many police officers do we have working for the State Police up here in the Copper Country now?
For the State Police right now at the Calumet Post, there's 15 troopers. I have 3 uniformed sergeants, 1 detective, and myself.
Okay. And you maintain regular patrols?
Yes, we cover we cover 3 counties. We cover Keweenaw, Houghton, and Baraga counties. And we have our detachment, which is down in Baraga, where we have people stationed down there. They work out of the buildings down there and provide services to Baraga County. We cover basically 20 hours out of the 24-hour day shift, and we have regular patrol schedule all the time. So there's always somebody working, and we answer the 911 calls through regional dispatch out of Negaunee, which is also a facility of the state police.
How does the jurisdiction work when you're working with the county sheriff department?
Jurisdiction works. Our jurisdiction is we cover the whole state of Michigan. So anywhere in the state of Michigan, we have jurisdiction. With the when we work in with our partners at the county sheriff's departments, it depend. We work side by side with them. We do the investigations with them. If there's incidents that happens that they need to fall in our jurisdiction to go across county lines, we're more than happy to provide our services and help them out in any way we can.
The function of the State Police Department, the post that's up there in Calumet, how does that differ with the city police and you know the localized law enforcement that you know we may run into on a more regular basis?
Well, take for instance here in Houghton City, they've had their own set of ordinances that the city adopts and different types of enforcement, such as parking and those type of things. The state police, we operate under all the state laws. We cover all the state trunk lines in the state of Michigan, and we also go through and take care of assisting other agencies by the services we provide, such as crime text scenes, accident investigations, canine services, bomb squads, laboratory. We can list out a whole different other services our department provides for the local agencies and our partners all across the state of Michigan.
The public oftentimes has interaction with their local police department. You can walk in, you can talk to an officer there. Does the same sort of relationship exist with the state police?
Absolutely. Our building is open from 8 to 4 every day. We have a lobby. You can walk in, come in and talk to us. You can stop down. We have an office space down in Launce on Wednesdays from 10 till noon. You can stop in there and come in and see us at the administrative building right downtown Launce. Any post across the state of Michigan, you can come in and there's a lobby, come to the front desk and contact anybody, and you'll have a person there in uniform that you can talk to.
What kind of issues do people come to you with?
Everything. You know, we're a full-service police agency. We cover anything that people can come to, whether it's a barking dog complaint to some of the worst crimes of it can happen, so many assaults to up to a murder.
In your active investigations here I keep thinking of Calumet Post because you know I live up in Calumet, so I drive past the post. So whatever I usually think of the state police, I think of them around in that immediate area. But you're actively involved in law enforcement throughout the state and anywhere there in the Copper Country, whether it's rural or even in the more populous areas.
Correct.
Okay.
Like we covered some of the areas out in Berga County where. Yeah, there's hardly any populations out in the Forest Service areas. We're out there in those areas. If something happens, we respond to incidents out there. We cover anything where there's no other police agency that's available. In some of the towns like down in southern Houghton County, which would also be covered by the Houghton County Sheriff's Department, but they don't have any village, township, or other type of police agencies. We are out there covering those areas as well.
Does being a rural post cause any disadvantages?
No, there's not really any disadvantages. The thing is, we seem not to have enough people to cover as much as the square area that the square mileage in the area that we cover. We need more people, but it just being in the rural areas, the population wise, the numbers for the models don't stand up the way they should for say the Flint post, where they've got quite a few more people than we do, just because of the population in that area.
What about resources? Does it have everything at your disposal as they would have in Flint?
Yes, we do. It takes them a little bit longer to get up here. We don't have the resources, say, stationed at our post or our nearby facility, but we do have resources that are available. I'll give you an instance here. Last week we came across, we have a missing person down in the Berga County area, and his vehicle was located out in here on Mountains. Once we found that vehicle, we went out there, did some primary checking around to see if we could locate that person, and went unable to, but we requested our helicopter, and our helicopter came up here from Lansing and flew around for a day and a half trying to do some searching. We can get those resources to us in a timely manner when we need them, and that's what's a nice thing about our agency is that it is a mobile police force that covers the whole state of Michigan, and we have strategically placed resources throughout the state of Michigan, including the Upper Peninsula.
I guess the follow-up to that would be, what about experience? So somebody that is, a state police in Wayne County, may have a lot more experience dealing with homicides and forensic investigations. You may not have as much up here. So when something that arises, is the post prepared?
Yes, we are. We've got experience just as much as what they do downstate. And actually, I like to tell people that my officers up here have more experience investigating crimes than what they do in the city, because in our agency down in the larger cities do more of a traffic function than they do a crime investigation. Down there, it's the our department really gets into where the detectives and specialized groups that are doing joint task force investigations. So if there a trooper shows up on your doorstep, he is a fully qualified person to investigate any type of incident that you're going to be reporting to him.
Now, are there any future plans for developments or increasing the force? You had mentioned that, you know, just as sheer numbers of personnel is one of the things you would like to see happen, or is a drawback anyways. And then there's also been talk about maybe adding, you know, sort of like how they have Giant and they've got Upset, you know, somebody that's dedicated to this area for drug investigation. Any kind of plans?
There's still some stuff in the works for adding to those type of eight or undercover investigations, multi-jurisdictional task force things, like you mentioned with Upset. We're always trying to get more people to our department to get back to add more people to the post, you know, to give us more personnel so that we can cover more of our shifts. Right now, if you look at it, we run two shifts, a day shift and an afternoon shift. And with contractual issues on the afternoon shift, we have to have two people working to cover that time period just because of the way the contract works between the Troopers Association and the department. So we need, at minimum, we need, for it to cover one day, we need six people to cover one day. Mm-hmm. And when we only have 15, if somebody's on vacation, there's a hole somewhere. So we just recently, our post was up for a transfer, which nobody put in for. Which tells us a lot of people in our agency throughout the state are at places that they want to be right now. Well, there's currently one school going on, a trooper recruit school down in Lansing that started back in March and is scheduled to graduate here, I believe, in August or September. And hopefully we'll have at least one or two people assigned from that recruit school to our post to help us backfill with the number of personnel. If you look at some of the models that they use for determining how much personnel have to be at a work site, you know, they take into account many, many different factors. And one of those models that were done projected that my work site here in Calumet, which covers the three counties, would need 26 troopers, which when you're down at 15, it looks like there's no way it's ever going to happen, because the number of personnel assigned throughout the state are for reasons other than just those models.
Mm, okay. Well, certainly will be something to hope for anyways, to see the increase. I know the Sheriff's Department says the same thing. Is, you know, they love to be able to do more, have more of a presence, and but you do the best you can with what you have.
So. Absolutely.
Well, one of the things that you have to monitor is people on the roads. And we were talking before we started was distracted driving causing a problem. And just as I get to see when somebody commits a crime and they end up in court, because I'm there covering court cases and I'm very glad I'm not that person, you kind of see scenes I don't want to see when that's the result of what could happen when you're distracted and you're driving and it goes bad.
Right. The end result that we don't want to see is where somebody loses their life in a traffic fatality with some incident where the driver that is distracted. You know, distracted driving is worse than drunk driving at some points. You know, there's many forms of being distracted. You know, the obvious big one with technology ages everybody's coming up with is the texting and driving. You know, that there's a law against texting and driving. And it's hard to discern between if somebody's actually texting on their phone or dialing. You know, Michigan doesn't have any laws right now stating that you can't use your phone while you're driving. And I'm sure there's going to be something coming down the road soon enough to make a law against that, but currently there isn't any right now. But the other things for distracted driving, you know, you could be dialing your phone, talking to your passengers, especially for the younger drivers, eating, adjusting radio, anything that takes your attention away from driving can be considered distracted driving.
Now, with the texting, are you able to read a text?
As long as you're stopped. If you stop at a stop sign, you can pick your phone up and read a text and do what you need to do. But again, that's where it's hard to say if you're answering your phone or if you're not. That's
okay. Wow. All right. The reason why I just asked this is, yes, I would think that definitely distracts you. It takes you know, so many, your eyes off the road to read that text, but a lot of people will, they'll hear that, they get a message and they'll take out their phone and they'll look at it and decide if they need to pull over and answer the person back. Well, you've already caused yourself to be distracted when you took the phone out and began to read that text, and it doesn't take long. You know,
exactly. You know, they say the average text message takes your eyes off the road for 3.7 seconds, which is when you're driving at 55 miles an hour, it's almost the length of a football field when you're driving.
And you had brought up other forms of distracted driving that, you know, even though they may not be illegal, like it's not illegal to eat in your car, and I'm guilty of that. I eat in my car all the time because I'm on the road all the time. But, you know, yeah, it becomes a bit of a juggling act, you know, with the burger and the fries and you got the Coke in the cup holder. But, you know, then you're trying to steer with your, you know, with your pinky and things like that. And it's like, oh, my gosh, this is, you know, if with common sense were to kick in, you would say, well, this really is dangerous to drive in this way.
Absolutely. And I think, like you said, all of us have done it at one point or not. And, you know, eating, you know, what happens if you drop that French fry that you really want to grab and you reach down for it? You're looking, it's taking your attention away from what you're doing on the road. And, you know, even I've seen people driving down the road reading a book.
Oh, okay.
You know, things like that. You know, there's a lot of different things that people do while they're driving. You know, it is a gregarious type of thing that you have to sit and drive, especially if you're on the road for, you do it for a living and you're driving all the time. You know, you want to help break up the monotony of it and do something that makes time go by a little bit quicker. But it's harder when you come to a scene and when you do find out that the driver was distracted and they shouldn't have been, and it caused somebody to lose their life or get seriously injured.
I've recently saw firsthand what happened to a friend of mine who had their first DUI. And luckily it was reduced to a driving while impaired, but still the penalties that come along with that was, I'm in court because I'm there covering cases, and so I'm paying attention to my friend's case too. And to find out the punishment for a first time, you know, never had a drunk driving ticket, never had been charged with a crime of any type, so a clean record, and even that one time that even reduced down to a driving impaired, just how much of a hit that really was.
Yes, the fines and costs that are associated with being arrested and charged for operating under the influence of intoxicated liquor could be up to $1,000, sometimes even higher, depending on the whole circumstances around it. You're also looking at facing at least 180-day license suspension or restrictions. You're also looking at the community service aspect of it and the fines and costs. Put that all together, it's an abominable offense for operating while you have been drinking.
Also, what I've, you know, come to realize just from doing this job is you don't have to be swerving all over the place to be pulled over.
No, there's a whole bunch of different reasons that you can be stopped. You could be speeding, driving too slow, could have your headlights off, could not be using your turn signals. There is no real one sign that any officer that would tell you is that they used for stopping somebody that is for drunk driving. You know, I always ask throw this out to my officers is, okay, what's your stop that you stop somebody for that you always get the drunk driving? Well, each person is different. Mm-hmm. You know, throughout my career, it could be for speeding. You stop somebody for speeding, and once you contact them, you find they've been under they were drunk. Whether somebody forgot to turn their headlights on, that's another sign that it could be under the influence. The obvious one, the swerving back and forth, that sometimes that's one. But there's no one perfect sign, because people, when there's different reasons why, you know, whatever the officer is going to pick up on, it's just being stopped. Mm-hmm. But if you're out there on the road and you commit one of the traffic offenses and get stopped, and if you've been drinking, you're more than likely going to get arrested for driving under the influence.
I've heard, and you can tell me if this is true or not, or tell me that you don't want to tell me, but you can also tell when somebody's trying too hard to not appear to be drunk driving.
Absolutely.
You know, they use that turn signal every single time the car moves. They're going exactly the speed limit. They're being almost ultra cautious, and they look like they're driving apprehensively, which is different than simply driving casually when you have nothing to worry about.
Right. We call it a behavior change. You know, once they see the blue car or the law enforcement car, their behavior changes dramatically from what they previously saw them doing. And they're trying to do everything by the book. And so once you're trying that hard, you're going to mess up quicker.
First Lieutenant Randy Dennison from the Michigan State Police Calumet Post, thank you so much for coming on the program. It's been a great talk.
Thank you, Rick.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.